The U.S. gives Israel 30 days to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza or risk losing military aid.
To get the level of trucks, get the level of food, water, medicine back up to acceptable levels.
Why the U.S. demand might actually stick this time.
You often hear, oh, there's nothing we can do. We don't have leverage. The United States has huge leverage over Israel, that they are highly dependent on American military aid to feel really safe.
Today is Tuesday, October 15th, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We have to see that Israel is not arbitrarily denying humanitarian assistance, making it into Gaza.
The U.S. has issued an ultimatum to Israel that it must increase the amount of humanitarian aid moving into Gaza or risk losing access to U.S. weapons funding. U.S. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller outlined a letter sent by Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to Israeli officials, saying there needs to be urgent and sustained action to reverse the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Gaza.
It has fallen by over 50% from where it was at its peak. So the secretary, along with Secretary Austin, thought it was appropriate to make clear to the government of Israel that there are changes that they need to make again to see that the level of assistance making it into Gaza comes back up from the very, very low levels that it is at today.
The letter says for Israel to continue qualifying for foreign military financing, the level of aid getting into Gaza must increase to at least 350 trucks a day. It also says Israel must institute additional humanitarian pauses and provide increased security for humanitarian sites.
The UN is also amplifying its concerns over the situation in Gaza. Here's spokesman Stefan Dujarric.
Humanitarian assistance into Gaza is woefully inadequate and is at the lowest level in months.
You know, Scott, it's really interesting, the timing of this, because for months and months, the U.S. has not really come down as hard on Israel over the humanitarian situation as I think many would have liked, or at least it would seem that way in the public, with so many protests even happening this week calling for the U.S. to do more, to focus on the suffering that we've been witnessing for the past year in Gaza.
I think that it might have something to do with the story that was released today, and I'm sure the Department of Defense knew about this ahead of time. It seems to have become a tactic on the Israeli side of trying to starve out Hamas, and they've been restricting aid from crossing the border into Gaza in that respect. And the letter actually references a specific U.S. law. They cite Section 620I of the Foreign Assistance Act, which prohibits military aid to countries that impede delivery of U.S. humanitarian assistance.
Right. This is complicated stuff. So here to help us understand what this all means is Stephen Van Evera, professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Political Science Department.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
So tell us what they have done here, what the U.S. has done.
The Biden administration are putting conditions on U.S. relations with Israel, especially U.S. military aid and other aid. U.S. gives Israel a lot of military aid, very important military aid, and a lot of other aid. And they are conditioning that aid now on Israel's management of the war, the way Israel's fighting the war. They're telling Israel, you've got to obey international human rights standards in the way you operate in Gaza. And it's been a long time coming. They have talked as if they were going to put conditions on U.S. military and economic aid over the last year, but they've never done it. And it's clear that Netanyahu has reached the judgment that they're never going to do it. The word I hear from the inside is that he's long been a believer that American public will never condition its relations with Israel on Israeli behavior, that he's often been warned by aides, hey, you got to stay within the white lines. You got to respect international norms. You're going to lose important international allies if you don't in the way you run your foreign policy and your wars. And Netanyahu, about 10 years ago, began talking back to them saying, You always tell me that, and the Americans never do. We do whatever we want, and the Americans make noise, but they never walk the walk. And it looks like he and he's also a deep believer in the peace by the sword. He is not a believer that you lose anything by treating your enemies in the most harsh fashion. He has a harsh view of peace. He's a Carthaginian peace guy. He's his father's son. His father was a historian of the Spanish Inquisition and spent his time reading about that. And you get pessimistic about the world when you've spent your time on the Spanish Inquisition. Understandable. Factually wrong, in my view, but understandable. In any event, the Biden people are saying, hey, we're really going to condition our future aid on this. You've got 30 days to straighten it out. And the thing that makes me believe that it's really happening is the specificity of what the State Department says. They are naming the number of trucks that have got across the Gaza border. They're naming the number of crossing points that have to be open. There's now four open. They want four open, and they want a fifth one open. So they're being very specific. You know, X and Y and Z have to happen. And when you have measurable, measurable deliverables, then you can say later, were they delivered? And if they weren't, you have grounds to bring down the hammer. And it is true. It's American law. You're not permitted for the U.S. It's not permitted for the U.S. to give aid to human rights violators. And so the Biden folks would be on very strong ground. If after the 30 days are up, that there's not 350 trucks going through each of the entrances.
Right. And it cited an actual section of the Foreign Assistance Act.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, a law like that, you can also always interpret in a taffy-like way and stretch it to mean things beyond what the language would tell you. But for sure, the way that law is written, it would require that the U.S. not give aid to an Israeli government that is deliberately starving the people of northern Gaza. What's been going on now, the number of aid trucks crossing the border into Gaza has been cut in half since springtime. And this is specifically a problem with no aid going to northern Gaza, where there, some of the folks who are covering the Gaza war are saying there seems to be a deliberate effort to completely zero out the amount of food and water that are going into part of northern Gaza, so that the people who live there will simply have to flee because they, you know, die of thirst in a rather quick time.
Well, there was a story today saying that Netanyahu had ordered that to starve out Hamas in northern Gaza to cut off all aid.
Yes, and BBC was reporting that too today. After that report came out, the Israelis let a small amount of aid go in. Netanyahu's general strategy is, you know, when people yell at me, I do 10% of what they're asking and hope they don't notice that I didn't do the other 90. So it seemed like they did a token a token change in policy. They allowed a token amount of aid. But the last I heard was that Israel seemed to be pursuing a very harsh policy toward northern Gaza, one of deliberately starving starving of food and water, the people who live there, and that it wasn't working. People weren't leaving. They're just going to die. That's how they're reacting. The folks in various parts of Gaza, you know, they don't have anywhere to go. So, the Israeli policy has gotten much harsher. It was already harsh, you know, in the winter, and it's gotten much harsher in the spring and summer.
Military aid is really the only leverage the U.S. has, right? It is the big hammer.
Well, I would say yes, but also the terms of the relationship. It's not just military aid, it's defense cooperation, it's technology transfer, it's intelligence cooperation. The Israelis, it's long been a pillar of Israeli political and security strategy that Israel must have a major power ally. This has been the way Israelis have thought since the 50s. Go not forth in the world without a major power ally. In the 50s, it was France, and then slowly in the 60s, it became the U.S., and now the U.S. has got a strategic relationship, meaning a de facto alliance with Israel. But it's been an understanding in Israeli politics. No one can be prime minister of Israel who can't manage the relationship with the United States, because Israel really, in the end, does depend on the U.S. to backstop it And it backstop its national security. Israel's feeling more frisky now. They're feeling more independent now because they've had a fantastic growth spurt. Their economy has grown by leaps and bounds. They've made really brilliant progress in developing their technology industry, and with that, everything that goes along with it, a powerful defense industry. They've just outgrown their Arab neighbors in terms of just GDP by leaps and bounds. And as a result, they now tower over the region militarily in ways they didn't used to. But they still live in a sea of 350 million Arabs and 2 million Sunni Muslims, and they're never going to be able to, you know, do the Carthaginian peace to that many people. And they're going to need help if they ever really face a big coalition against them again. So it's understood, yes, what you said, that America's willingness to backstop Israel's national security is vital to Israel. And if they ever really felt it was conditional, they would bend. People underestimate American leverage here. You often hear, oh, there's nothing we can do. We don't have leverage. The United States has huge leverage over Israel because of what you said, that they are highly dependent on American military aid to feel really safe. The real analogy people should keep in mind is the 1956 Suez War. Not quite analogy, it's not quite a perfect analogy because Israel was a smaller player in the world then, but if you might remember what occurred, Israel and France and Britain launched a war on Egypt that the Eisenhower administration disapproved of, and Ike just got on the phone. And it took him about a day or two just to tell those three actors, you didn't clear this with us, and we don't like it, and you have to reverse course. Walk this cat back. Stop the war, pull your troops out, and return to Sinai. And Israel did it, because the U.S. had and still has huge leverage.
The United States told the U.N. Security Council last week that Israel needs to address what they called urgently catastrophic conditions among Palestinians across the Gaza Strip. This is not new, though. We've been hearing this for the past year. Why do you think the U.S. is now taking this step at this moment?
I think because Israel's behavior is becoming more extreme. As I said, the amount of trucks that are permitted to cross the border carrying food aid has been cut in half since the spring. This idea of denying water to people deliberately, it's the first time I've really seen anybody since the very beginning of the war say that Israel has a policy of letting people die of thirst. The Israelis have been moving the goalposts further and further toward basically collective punishment of the Palestinians. I think, is politics playing a role here too? Biden and his team are having a hard time answering questions from the American public. Why aren't you asking the Israelis to behave like good world citizens? You're letting them violate basic international norms, and you're doing it while you're being very generous to them and on this national security front. So, you know, why aren't you being conditional? And this answer that we get, which is Israel has a right to decide its own foreign policy. We also hear that a lot about Ukraine. It's become a thing that's said in Washington. Other countries have a right to decide their own policies. To my view, American policy toward everyone in the world should always be conditional. And it's ridiculous to say that other actors, powers, countries have a right to decide things for themselves if they are if they're American allies or if they're receiving aid from the U.S. George Kennan and Otto Bismarck and George Marshall and anybody, they would never accept the notion that our relationships with others shouldn't be conditional on others' conformity with American foreign policy and U.S. national interests to some degree, a negotiated accommodation. The idea that giving anybody a blank check. The last time a great power gave a true blank check in world affairs, as I remember, was when the Germans gave it to the Austrians in July 1914. The idea of blank checks, I mean, that's what people have been saying we should do with Netanyahu. Yeah, give them a blank check. You know, fine, he's doing stuff we don't like. Let's keep giving him the weapons, but not condition them. That's a blank check. And when the Germans did it in 1914, it caused World War One.
Mm. Interesting.
I'm stretching things there. I'm getting a little historical.
No, it makes an awful lot of sense.
I believe that Biden should condition the general policies of both sides toward the other U.S. aid. U.S. aid should be conditioned on the general policies of both sides, especially for Israel. It should be demanded that they accept the two-state solution. toward the conflict, that the long-run goal here has to be a two-state solution. There's only one way to end this conflict, and the U.S. should have a policy, no weapons, no aid, no nothing, if you won't endorse a two-state solution. This was American policy for five decades. How long has it been? And it was also Israeli policy. Only Netanyahu has walked that back and abandoned it. Why has Washington been okay with that? Washington should not be okay with that. And we should say to the other side as well, what's our main annoyance with Iran? People ought to say, it's, you know, we call them terrorists, whatever, they're not very polite. Okay. The biggest problem with them is that they also reject the two-state solution. And we should make the American people understand that should be our main objection to them. And we'll be a lot nicer to them if they decide to accept one. Refereeing a war, that's important. You know, that's what you and I are doing here when we talk about aid to Gaza, starving them out. It's sort of refereeing the way you play the game. You know, are you allowed to do a clipping and are you allowed to rough the quarterback? Okay. Yes, no. But we should also keep in mind the long-term goal to end the war. And I'm disappointed that so many voices in the U.S. are expressing concern about this conflict, but not very many people are raising this question of both Netanyahu and Iran refusing to accept the two-state solution. That cannot be accepted.
Well, it makes you ask the question, would there be a Hamas had there been two states?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, it's a great question. Have there been two states? I mean, if we really reached a two-state solution, no, I think, number one, we couldn't have reached a two-state solution with Hamas. But number two, there would be no Hamas. Hamas is a result of the radicalization that happens with war. This is the kind of extremism you get when you have 50 years of war. So I think it would have headed off this radicalization. And I think, frankly, that the results of this war is going to be a further radicalization of parts of the Palestinian right. community. You're seeing a massive traumatization going on here, and it's gonna affect future generations. We're gonna see more Black Widow phenomena, if you know what that was back after the Second Intifada. But you get my drift here, which is let's keep our eye on the prize as well as on the next play, and there should be American conditionality that would create carrots and sticks.
Stephen, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you guys.
That was Stephen Van Evera, professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, Lori. It just, you know, goes to show at the end of the day, he who has the big stick.
This is a conversation that is obviously going to continue, given the fact that the Biden administration wants diplomacy and, as we were talking about, with Stephen, a two-state solution, but it does not appear that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has any interest in approaching the subject of a two-state solution.
Well, he's made a whole career blocking the two-state solution.
And then there's a whole other issue that we can obviously get into another day about the fact that we'd also just heard that there are no talks ongoing at this moment for anything related to the hostages still being held by Hamas.
Hmm. This has been The Issue from The Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
You can follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And to get news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll see you tomorrow.